even if it's not like a full-on photo shoot, it's still very interesting to see just visually. And then you want to hear what they're saying, even though I don't know if that sounds shallow or not, but
it's sort of the reality of how music is presented now. And how, I mean, honestly, how it's been presented since like music became like a youth culture phenomenon, you know, in the 60s. It's like, just like, you know, you got to present your art with a cool image.
From Prince to whoever it is now.
So, I mean, if there's something that I could like encourage, you know, musicians who are making music in Jacksonville and planning on releasing it, it's like, it should be part of your release plan to get in touch with a photographer and have them shoot some photos of you, you know, at least a handful of photos.
We'll do a little cheers to this recording, Matt, cheers. For joining us. Nice to finally meet you. And to Tony joining us for an episode for once. I like it. All right, let me get started.
Yo, Spinheads, welcome back to another episode of the Next Spin podcast. This is episode 11, and to any new listeners joining us for the first time, welcome to the club. If you haven't heard our previous episode from our Salsa Vinyl Night, do yourself and your ears a favor and go listen to that after you finish this episode. We had a great conversation about salsa music with special guest co-host DJ Poppy Disco. And if there's one thing he taught us that was the most important lesson when it comes to salsa music, it's don't fuck up the cowbells, all right? Listen to that episode for yourself to find out what that means. But in the meantime, welcome to the show. My name is Bodder Milligan, and I'm one of your hosts today. Co-piloting this episode with me is someone who normally prefers to be behind a camera instead of in front of a mic, but he's making a special exception tonight considering the guest we have with us. Spinheads, let's give it up for Next Spin's elusive leader, Tony Smilajic.
I'm like, are you about to put applause?
Well, I mean, if you had your headphones on, you would hear all the applause.
No. I don't want to hear my voice. But hello.
All right. Tony, you have such a nice voice, you know, for podcasting. It's a shame you don't even like it. So I want to know off the bat, right? We don't have to get too into it yet. I'll introduce our guest in full here in a sec. But what is it about today's guest that has you stepping into the spotlight for once?
I think it's just the connection with Matt and the, I guess, the crossover between arts and culture. Well, I mean, arts and culture, music is related to that. But as far as galleries, finding new musicians, like knowing the pulse of Jacksonville when it comes to culture, I think Matt has done an incredible job, especially, I mean, I was introduced to him through Void. And since then, it's been kind of a interest of mine to see what he does next. So even when he went to WJCT, I was very interested to see what they would do. So
awesome. So you'd agree he's someone absolutely worth spotlighting, someone absolutely worth kicking out the rest of the crew for this episode for a spotlight.
That was Bodder's choice. That was not mine.
Whatever. Well, I'm telling Adrian and Yaya, this is all your idea. One last thing to do before we introduce Matt and whatnot. I want to address the listeners, specifically the new Spinheads joining us today. Make sure you're following the Next Spin account on Instagram or Twitter. That's at Next Spin. That's with two X's. If you're ever curious about what goes on during our vinyl meetups, recordings, or just want to see records from our personal collections, our social media has it all. Now, back to the reason why we're down a few members from our normal squad today is because this episode marks another offering of something we started two episodes ago with DJ Mass Appeal, which is spotlighting some of our favorite people doing interesting things in music, whether they're singers, rappers, guitarists, engineers, DJs, or behind the scenes. The goal is all the same, which is to have great conversations about music with those contributing to it in unique ways, which leads me to our esteemed guest this episode. In addition to all the nice things Tony just shared about him, the man has reported on national stories for the New York Times. He's the former editor of the culture and lifestyle publication Void Magazine, and he's currently WJCT's arts and culture editor, as well as being a musician himself. Spinheads, let's officially welcome Matthew Shaw to the show. What up, Matt?
Thanks, Spinheads. I like that.
That was Nick Fresh.
Shout out to Nick Fresh for coining that for us. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm wondering if you kicked people out or they just took a hard pass when they knew that.
I don't think they know what's happening. Hardy's like, you're going to a podcast.
We're still working on communication outlines and whatnot. When Tony went ahead and recommended we get you on the show. I was definitely, you were one of the guests I was quick to jump on. Like, yeah, we gotta get Matt on the show.
Cool.
I also want to give you credit before we really get talking about your career and whatnot. I try to learn at least one new thing a day. And thanks to some of the articles I read by you today, I learned that Fleetwood Mac's Rumors album has been on the charts for, what, 376 weeks since it debuted in 1977?
Yeah, that's an absurd number, right?
What? Dude, yeah. I was like, nah, he's got to be bluffing.
Yeah, I think...
No, facts.
Yeah, Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, is up there, too. That one came out in 58 or something. So I think maybe more weeks on the charts or as a top-selling album, but not as high as Rumors.
Hmm. Wait till the kids find out about Miles Davis.
Just wait. Yo, there is a fantastic Miles Davis documentary, I think on Hulu or Netflix, that James Ciboney put me on. But yeah, I thought that was a pretty wild fact that an album that old has been on the charts for that long. Like, that's a one hell of an accomplishment.
Yeah, it's ubiquitous. How many people have you had on the podcast that own that record, Rumors?
Come on.
Does how many everybody people, own it?
How many people use it for, like, everything but playing records, right? Like, you give that
it's
album.
A status symbol.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. You give that record away. You find out someone got their first record player. Here's a copy of Rumors. Don't worry, I've got 10 of them.
Totally.
You know? No, oddly, like, I got home and Freddie had the Pink Floyd, what is the main album?
Dark Side of the Moon.
Yes.
Yeah.
He just bought it. I was like, this was just in the article I was reading that Matt had.
Yeah.
But
that's another one. Yeah. There's that line from Wayne's World where he's like, forget. Maybe it's like a Zappa record. He's like, you know, if you lived in the suburbs, they issued it to you with in the mail with like test packets of Tide.
That's funny. Well, look, on the topic of vinyl and records, Matt, what was your first conscious exposure to vinyl? Can you recall what was the first record you remember like buying?
Yeah, I saw that question. You know, thanks for sending them early, 20 minutes before this. But, you know,
I
was racking my brain. I honestly don't remember the first record that I bought. I'll say that it was 2011 or 12. I was living in San Francisco, and there is at that time that was the first time I was like exposed to, you know, a record collecting community. And there's, you know, more than a dozen just in San Francisco alone. And at that time, I think like vinyl was still in this sort of like nascent where it was like, you know, indie artists would put out vinyl. And then you had people like sort of collecting old records. There wasn't like a big reissue culture yet. And you didn't have like Olivia Rodrigo putting out a vinyl or like, you know, Adele at that point probably wasn't putting out vinyl. So it was a different kind of time for it. But I started going to like Amoeba Records, which they have a big flagship store in San Francisco. And I had a buddy who we just started buying records together. And then my mom, she held on to her record collection, her and my dad's record collection. And I think I started buying some records. I came home from San Francisco and was like, where are your records? And I just like took her collection too. So I basically got like a majority of the catalog of the Beatles and like, you know, Rumors was in there, of course. Didn't have to buy Rumors. And, you know, so I had like a nice, like sort of base there of like, you know, 70s and 80s pop music, Rod Stewart. And my dad was like super into like Neil Young and some more like, sort of like hippie music and stuff. But, then, you know, when I was in San Francisco, I was teaching, my partner was, in law school. We were living in this tiny apartment and, we were pretty broke. And my collecting at that point was just like, I wanted like mood music for our little apartment because like we didn't have money to like go out to eat at fancy restaurants or, you know, we didn't have a lot of disposable income. And so I would, you know, I'd get paid every 2 weeks and usually like on a Friday afternoon or something, I would get on the Ann Judah train from my neighborhood in the Sunset and ride up into the Haight-Ashbury. And like at the top of the Haight-Ashbury was where Amoeba Records was. And then you could walk from the upper Haight to the lower Haight and hit six record stores on your way. And like the record stores too, like all sort of like specialized in different stuff. So you had like, you know, Amoeba, which had everything, but then you had like Groove Merchant, which is like, you know, soul and R&B. And like, it's a place where people who are into like sampling music, like go and like dig through the crates there.
Because Groove Merchant's still around.
Yeah. 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 They've been there for like 40 years or something.
Mm-hmm. How long were you in San Francisco?
Like 7 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So most of my 20s, I was in San Francisco.
Word. Okay. And yeah. Got it. So, and wait, you moved to Jax, just back to Jax recently or a few
years? Yeah. So probably it's been 7 years. I moved back in 2015. So Word. Yeah, 7 years.
Were you surfing in San Francisco?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So was that, as far as like the record collecting community, were those surfers?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the surf community in San Francisco, that was like, you know, as everyone's 20s are, you know, it's like a really formative time in your life. But I think especially for me and the community that I was in there, like, not to get like too deep into like surf culture in Jacksonville, but surf culture in San Francisco was, you know, there was people who were like, surfing was just something that they did. You wouldn't be able to tell by like the way they dressed or like the way that they behaved. Like, they weren't just like talking about surfing all the time or like, yo bro, gnarly, like that, you know, like there wasn't sort of like that same language and like sort of look to surfing out there. You know, there were artists and like woodworkers and like you know, musicians, especially like within that surf community. And like, even beyond the surf community, there's a lot of people who are just like, it was my first exposure to people who would like, you know, I work in a coffee shop for 3 days a week, but I'm really like working on this music project. Hmm. Or I really am like, you know, I just do that to pay rent at my studio space so I can like work on my visual art. And I just like, coming from where I came from at the beach in Jacksonville, I didn't meet a lot of people who were like, identified themselves as like an artist outside of like their work, you know. It was like, you get to a certain age, at least my experience growing up here, it's like, get to a certain age, you basically stop surfing because you're working like a 9-to-5 job, you stop playing in bands. I don't know, it's like, and I know that's reductive, that's not like the truth, but that's sort of what my exposure was up to that point. So yeah, it was like, it was a really formative time in my life, and just getting, you know, because I was teaching at that time, and my whole like thing with teaching really was, hey, I get summers off, there's a lot of breaks and stuff, and I was playing music and just sort of like, I was interested in writing too, so I thought I'd like have free time to write. And so it was just sort of like, I wasn't identifying myself as a teacher.
What were you teaching?
Elementary school. Okay. Yeah, I taught second grade for 5 years out there. Right. Yeah. So I've got 7 and 8 year olds.
I've got some friends that have stuck with teaching as their main gig because of the freedom it affords them during the summer to like pursue those passion projects and those other hobbies that they, you know, want to build up and get serious about.
Absolutely. It's a great, you know, valuable thing to do. Mm-hmm. My experience was that I was exhausted, you know, and it's like, it is so hard.
Hell yeah.
And so working it was like writers. Yeah, you're like,
big shout out to teachers.
Yeah, I have all these breaks, you know, summer break and like 2 weeks for Christmas, but like half that time spent just like resting, you know, like getting your mind right again.
Yeah. But that's when you started writing, was in San Francisco?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was for surfing, or did that transition to music at some point?
I was thinking about this the other day. But yeah, I mean, I was playing in bands like off and on, doing different projects. So I was, you know, that writing process to me is like way different than like writing for, you know, like publication or journalism or something. But one of the first things I did, like writing that was published, and I'm doing air quotes, nobody can see that, but just realize that
our listeners have a podcast. Yeah, our listeners have imagination.
So if you want to visualize me doing air quotes. But a friend of mine that I surfed with who was in culinary school, we were really into, I would talk to him about food a lot, and we were sort of like, this is like when Anthony Bourdain's show was like first out and like really cool. And we decided to do this thing where we would go like chase waves somewhere within, you know, like 75 miles of San Francisco, and either like before or after, we would like check out a restaurant that was like on our radar. And then so we would write kind of like a narrative of like the surf trip that we went on, and then also like review the food that we ate.
That's cool.
And we called it Bored and Hungry.
Like, I feel like that'd be a cool spelled series like now.
B-O-A-R-D, Bored and Hungry. Get it? Yeah. And there was a like a surf report blog like you have here in Jacksonville, like Void Live was originally just like, you know, surf pictures from the pier like twice a day. And there's like 911 surf report. So there was one called Surf Pulse in San Francisco. And I had been doing like the surf report for them for a bit. And I was like, hey, can I like just put my meandering writing up here? And they let me do it. And so that was like my first like published things. But it was really, for all intents and purposes, it was a blog. So.
So I guess as like you were fine tuning your craft and learning how to become a writer, what were some of the publications or writers or music journalists that you were looking to for inspiration?
You know, honestly, like even before I left Jacksonville, like when I was in college here, I would pick up Folio Weekly all the time. Mm. And the arts and culture writing in there was like insane. And then I didn't realize at that point until
insane
like
in a good way.
It was so good. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And like they were doing, I mean, at that time, you have to remember like Alt Weeklies, like 2010-ish. There were still like, you know, they're 80 pages every time. And they were doing this like hardcore investigative journalism and like breaking stories before the newspaper broke it. And kind of had this like liberal progressive bent to mm-hmm. it, which was like super like in a city like Jacksonville, it was just like, very
refreshing.
Yeah, it was like, whoa, kind of like a view of like a different world. And then you go around the country and you realize there's an Alt-Weekly like in every city. You know, it's like the Village Voice mm-hmm. in New York was like the original Alt-Weekly, and the thing that helped that take off is that they were the first people to be like interested in the counterculture and think that like other people would want to know like about, you know, the underground art scene in that city. That kind of, I mean, even before that, you know, like the New York Times and these big newspapers, they didn't have like heavy arts and culture coverage. It was like the alt weeklies that were doing that. And so I think my, yeah, you asked about, back to your question, like the first writers that I was, you know, kind of interested in or inspired by, it was like all from those kind of like counterculture Alt-Weekly publications.
I know when you came back, you were with Folio, right? And
yeah.
For yeah. some point. But then I'm more curious about when Void transitioned from surf and then really had like an impact on
yeah.
the music side or the mm-hmm. arts and culture side. Like what was that decision? Or was that when you were around? Or was that already something that was in place?
I mean, I think that was part of the vision. Yeah, when I took over at Void. Yeah, so I guess just to backtrack, I was the editor at Folio. That was my first editor job. I'd been in Jacksonville for 7 months and written like a couple investigative stories for Folio and gotten to know the editor at that time, Jeff Billman, pretty well. And he sort of like unceremoniously left, and they asked me if I wanted to like interview for the editor job. And I'd been writing for them for like 7 months. And I was like, as green as you can get,
yeah.
you know, like,
yeah, sure about this.
He one story we worked on together when he was there, like, he was like, oh, you need to pull like a public records request for this. And I was like, I don't know how to do that. I didn't go to journalism school or whatever. So like, I learned a lot from him, but it was like, when I got to Folio, it was like trial by fire, like basically like figuring this stuff out for myself. I left Folio. I'd started writing for Surfer Magazine. I had a connection there. A friend of mine from San Francisco got a job as a managing editor there, this guy Ashton Goggins. And he was like, oh, I want to get you writing for Surfer. And I was like, okay, like I don't even really know what that means. And then like a couple weeks later, he was like, hey, we're planning a trip to the Virgin Islands. You want to go down there for 9 days and surf and, you know, write about the trip with these like pro surfers. And
I
was like,
I guess, I mean,
that's a thing that happens. And so, yeah, so I did that. And then like within that first year that I was with Surfer, I was like, I went to like three different countries and like all over the States, like just writing about surfing. And I just decided like, okay, I can just like do freelance now. And, I left Folio. And so I did like freelance work for I don't know. It all runs together now, but a couple years. And then I knew the guys from Void from the surf community. And they knew that I had been writing for Surfer for a while. So I would see them and they would, you know, they'd be like, oh, you should write something for Void sometime. And, you know, it's kind of just like, I don't know. It wasn't really what I was after at that point. And at a certain point, like the more I thought about it, you know, this was like a kind of a long progression for me, like of just like looking at what was out there, like locally, local coverage of like arts and culture and stuff. And then just thinking more and more about this Void thing. It's like, what could I do with this? They had this great platform. It was a super positive brand that had a lot of like love in the community for like, you know, its positivity. I mean, they had like 60,000 followers on Instagram and like people were paying attention to what they were doing. And I kind of just thought to myself, like, if I could take over this magazine, what would I do with it? And I kind of pitched that to Ty Wallace, who was like the president of the company. And I was just like, you know, like the magazine looks good. I think like if we could make a point to like do like put really good writing in here, be more representative of the city as far as like the people that we're putting on the pages and the people who are like shooting photos for us, and this thing could like really reflect the city and what's happening like in the culture in the city. And there about this time the editor that was there before me, Zach, he was leaving and they were like, hey, do you want to just take this over? And so like in a way, like I feel like I kind of like manifested it, you know. It was just like, I want to do this, what do you guys think about this? And they were like, okay. It kind of like all worked out.
Right place, right time for the second time in a row. Oh.
Yeah, right. Hmm. So that's kind of how that happened. And like I said, yeah, I mean, like one of the first things that I did like with that sort of vision in mind was my friend Dan Brown, who was like twice arts and culture editor at Folio Weekly. He's like one of the best writers I know. He's a musician. I just like, hey, you can be like our arts and music person. And I was like, every issue, I want to write about like two local artists, you know, musical artists, like review their work. And then we'll do like a long form feature of or a profile of like either a musician or a visual artist, like in every issue. And so we just sort of like started from that and kind of like built around kind of that kind of approach.
What year was this?
2018, I think. Yeah.
I feel like that's around the time that I got actually introduced to Void. Like I knew about Void, but it was a surf magazine.
Yeah,
like that was the covers of it. I was like, I'm not interested. And it wasn't, I don't think the branding was as strong as when you took over. I don't know how much say you had in the branding side, but I mean, even hearing you say, you know, the blog that you're doing, Bored and Hungry, I'm like, these are all like small things that are very impactful.
Yeah.
And I think when it switched up and you started getting really interesting photography or just works that introduced me to so many artists in the city as the cover, it made me pick up the cover or pick up the magazine and start actually seeing what y'all were doing.
Yeah. Well, thanks for saying that. Yeah. And there was the art director at that time, this guy, Wesley Parsons, was, you know, he'd been there for a couple of years and we kind of like were, simpatico on like a lot of like design elements too. He's like very minimalist, like clean design, and that was something that I was like really thought would work well for, like, you know, the thing about like presenting something in print is you want it to like feel special and niche, because like people don't have time or they don't care enough, they'd rather look at their phone. So you got to really like make something beautiful for them to like want to pick it up and feel special. And it's hard to do that with a free magazine that you're giving out to people for free.
So you brought up a WJCT a few times, and you're currently their arts and culture editor. And I know you have a prominent role with their you know, new music platform, the Jacksonville Music Experience, or JME. And some of the more prominent articles on the website are about the local music scene. There's some curated playlists, but there's also a decent offering of articles and think pieces about vinyl. I guess, why is it important vinyl gets a prominent feature on a platform like the JME?
Yeah. I think, you know, there's probably a couple reasons, but I think, you know, we are in a spot now like where there are like a lot of places to buy records, like relatively so compared to like when I moved back here, there's like more places to get to buy vinyl. And I think there's a big enough culture around it too, where people are interested in that kind of idea of crate digging. And, I think it's just like, it's an easy tee up to like talk about music that otherwise you wouldn't, maybe talk about, you know, it's like come up with a theme, like we've done like guilty pleasure records or something, which is like, you know, I would, I mean, if you asked me about Jimmy Buffett, I would talk to you like for a long time about Jimmy Buffett, but I would never like propose, hey, let's talk about Jimmy Buffett. But like to, you know, like to have a theme like that, then I get to like say, you know, something redeeming about Jimmy Buffett, and it's not just all like Margaritaville and blah, blah, blah. So I do think like as a writer, it's a good entry point to just sort of like wax on, you know, something silly or something unique that otherwise you wouldn't like be able to talk about or have a reason to talk about. But I, you know, like, and you guys have this podcast too. So it's that's part of this culture. When I look around, it's like, you know, people are interested in vinyl, and like, you know, so kudos to you guys for bringing that into the light.
I appreciate it.
And even with the vinyl for, I guess we're doing it now, as I think over the past 2 years since COVID started, I think it became like a bigger thing for a lot more people to start collecting vinyl, or just a much more common conversation now, or the people I meet when I go to record stores. But y'all already had it with when Void was doing it, the Void on Vinyl.
Yeah.
How, why did you choose to do it then? Yeah. Did you already see like a...
Yeah, did you see the writings on the wall, I guess?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think I was like maybe more ambitious about it at that point. I thought there was like maybe more of a demand than there was at the time. Like the things didn't sell all that well, to be honest. But it was part and parcel to like sort of that vision that I kind of talked about earlier. It's like, even going back to like when I said I wanted to like put more arts and culture in the magazine, I also like, because I was trying to make this like unique, like niche print thing that people want to pick up. And it's like, it's most of it's not going to go online and have to compete with like, you know, if you're writing about like a big time touring musician or something, and it's like for a local publication, it's like you post that online, and like also Pitchfork's written about that person and the New York Times has written about that person. It's like your article is not going to get read. So I was like, let's just do local only. So like Void, since it was a print thing, the approach was like, let's only, there's enough like local musicians to talk about and, you know, people doing quality stuff. So like, let's only do local. And so it kind of started from that. And then I knew Jonathan Grant Berlin, who like has a vinyl record pressing in Atlantic Beach. And
how's that? Is that still like operating?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Shit. I mean, if I read your article right, it's like not only are they still operating, but I mean, they're backed up with orders, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's huge, because of the demand, log jams in the record pressing right now. I forget what the number was, but when I was writing an article a while back, and I was like kind of looking for like how many record presses are there like actually in the United States? And it was like 40 or something. There's like,
and one is here.
Yeah, there's one here. There's one in Atlanta. I think, I don't know if there's another one in Florida, but yeah, Jonathan, I knew he had the record press and got some pricing from him and found out like, okay, if we want to do, you know, minimum of like 300 records or something and do like an all local compilation, like this is how much it's going to cost. You know, we're as I said, like we're advertiser funded, you know, print product. Like, can we just get some cool advertisers who want to help us like, you know, pay the production costs of this record. And so, yeah, we were able to get, I think the same people sponsored each record. It's like Hotel Palms and Taco Lou. And, I think Nighthawks did.
Yeah. I see it here. Bold Bean, Taco Lou, Hotel Palms, Hop Singer.
Yeah. And for them, it was like, I think like a drop in the bucket, you know, but to get to that, like whatever it was, like $2,000 or something to press 300 records, it was like, you know, get a couple sponsors and we made it happen. Then we did like a vinyl release party for one of them, and that was pretty cool. We put like eight artists on for a night, and we sold out what was Nighthawks back then. And I thought that was good. that was like a really, it felt somewhat triumphant that night because it was like maybe the most eclectic lineup I've ever seen in Jacksonville. And I was like, kind of like, you know, maybe we put all these people up on the stage and you get like this band brings their crowd and this band brings their crowd or whatever. And it was that like that to a certain degree, but people stayed and maybe they came for like to see Mr. Al Pete or maybe they came to see Love Culture and then they got to see the Young Step, you know, like an indie rock band. And they were like, oh, they're actually like really sick, you know? So it was cool. And I think like, that sort of genre agnostic thing that we were talking about earlier, all those records are just like all over the place. So like sequencing the tracks on those was like the hardest part. It's like, how do you put, you know, this like bluegrass song after?
You know, like yeah. This hip-hop track.
Yeah. 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 So
how do I follow up from Black Toilet, right?
Right. Yeah.
I was just going to bring up Black Toilet.
Some mumble rap into some bluegrass. Yeah.
I guess it'd be safe to say that, you know, you kind of carried on what was working for you at Void in the sense of like utilizing Jacksonville's like natural resources in the form of like artists and musicians. Because I know it almost seems like you kind of carried that over with the Jacksonville music experience, right? You're not the sole contributor of the Jacksonville music experience. You have a pretty stacked roster of writers, musicians, and other people involved. Our very own Tony Smilajic among that crew. Yeah. I wanted to hear about the team that you've compiled to build out the Jacksonville music experience.
Yeah, I think, a lot of those connections are people that I made through, you know, not even necessarily through journalism. It was like, or maybe like I did get to know them through like, you know, Giella, I think, from doing a story about them. And then, you know, just becoming friends like through the music scene and stuff. And it was just people who had shown an interest, you know, in contributing to something like this. And I thought had something to say, you know, I'm always like cautious not to like, I don't know that like the whole gatekeeping thing, like I don't want to be that, but these were people who I knew like had an interest in contributing to something like this, had something to say, had some experience like in broadcasting or writing or, you know, podcasts or whatever, you know, like, had a voice that they like, maybe they just wanted to like cultivate. And so like part of it is like, you know, somebody like Dan Brown, who's like a, you know, a really experienced journalist. And then somebody like, you know, Giella, who's like really wanted, you know, like an entryway into that and just sort of a willingness, I guess, on my part to like, not a willingness, but knowing like they have something to say and they would be a good contributor here. And whatever I can do to kind of like facilitate that, you know,
yeah,
like from an editor role, you know.
How are you finding these people? Or how are you finding musicians in general? Like, how do you find new bands?
In Jacksonville?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Social media is helpful. Going to shows. Like, I don't know. It's kind of like, at a certain point, I do know, and this happened, at some point it changed at Void where, like, all of a sudden, like, people were sending me music, you know? And had got my email from somebody. Or they would send me a DM or something, you know, and say like, hey, I've got this record. Or I just put out this single.
So do you actually listen to them when somebody sends
yeah,
it to
you? Yeah, how much? Did you listen to all of them?
Yeah, I try to. I'm sure I've missed some stuff before. So if I missed yours, I'm sorry. But I you know, I have like different folders in my inbox and it's like, you know, sometimes it gets like pretty stacked. But yeah, I do try to like, I'll go through and like if I have an hour or something, you know, like, just do some intentional listening. And you know, it's like I think there's, it's not, I don't want to say there's like a low bar for like people to get something written about, but if it's done like in quality, you know, if the quality is good, you know, that goes back to that like not wanting to feel like a gatekeeper either, you know. It's like you made this thing. Maybe it's not even like within my listening tastes, you know, but I've done this long enough where I can imagine an audience for your track. You know?
You can recognize the talent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can find something redeeming, something endearing about, you know, your song and your approach to it. And so it's like, The hardest part I'll say is like there's an educational piece because sometimes people just send you like a WAV file or like a link to their Spotify, their song up on Spotify, and you're like, wait, like do you have a press photo? I don't know anything about this song. I don't know who you are. Like, I don't, you know, and it's like, if you're going to write about something, especially in digital media, if I don't have a photograph of you, you know, like how am I going to put this online? Like nobody's going to click this thing, you know.
How much does appearance play into, I guess, I don't know, when you get somebody's mixtape or whatever you're getting, like if they have strong visuals, etc.
Yeah.
And I come across that with like working with music artists, especially now. I just worked with someone 2 weeks ago who has an incredible project. She's never done music before and she's just like, I'm gonna put this together and I want this to be done right. And she really wanted strong visuals across the board for it. And she's just kind of packaging it in a way to present it over like a 3 or 4 month period.
Cool.
And I'm like, it's such a interesting conversation having it with her where I'm like, I usually people are just kind of, they'll throw out a song or something. Maybe they'll take a selfie in at Wildcrafters.
And yeah. Feel like this is, yeah. Which this is fine. It. If that's yeah. your, if that's your style, you know, but I do think like, I think in this day and age, like your presentation, like visually is part of who you are as an artist, you know, at this point, you know? And so I think like that thing about being sort of like a fully formed artist, you know, where you're like, you know, I've got my unique sound, you know, my unique delivery, but I also know how I want to look and how I want to like present my art, you know? Which I think like Sailor Goon is like a great example of this. Like absolutely. Sailor Goon, when I, first came across Kayla's music, it was like not only was like she's got this incredible voice and this super like interesting like jazzy kind of bedroom pop production thing happening, but like then she was already like making these surrealist music videos too, and like everything seemed like really well thought out, or at least you could tell like she was working with people who like she recognized some, you know, some other visual artists and wanted to work with them because she thought that they could help her like bring her vision to fruition. So,
you didn't have to do much of the work of filling in the gaps because the picture is all right there. All you're doing is putting it on a platform.
Certainly. Yeah. Hmm. It's certainly helpful, you know, to have like a strong visual. And again, it goes like, that's the bar is just like quality. Like, is it a high res photo? You know, it doesn't really necessarily have anything to do with like, how, I don't know, like how you look. Certainly if you're like dressed super cool and like, I don't know, found like a cool spot to take a photo, a cool setting, like yeah, that's helpful. But
and I don't think that has to be like an expensive thing. You don't need to hire everybody if you have the, like, I mean Giello does a great job, from Ebony Payne to whoever. Like they, even if it's not like a full-on photo shoot, it's still very interesting to see just visually, and then you want to hear what they're saying, even though I don't know if that sounds shallow or not, but
it's sort of the reality of how music is presented now, and how, I mean honestly, how it's been presented since like music became like a youth culture phenomenon, you know, in the 60s. It's like just like, you know, you got to present your art with a like a cool image,
from Prince to
It is now. So I mean, if there's something that I could like encourage, you know, musicians who are making music in Jacksonville and planning on releasing it, it's like it should be part of your release plan to get in touch with a photographer and have them shoot some photos of you, you know, at least a handful of photos.
I got a link to Tony Smilajic's contact information in the show notes.
Exactly. Reach out to Tony.
I want to shift gears real quick to talk about another hat that you wear. But one that isn't that surprising, all things considered. You're also a co-founder of the imprint Winterland Records and its music festival offshoot Winterland Presents, which happens to have a 2-day show coming up the weekend this episode airs. I'm going to try to have it out by Wednesday. The 2-day show is Saturday and Sunday, February 26th through the 27th. And Matt, I got to know, I got to ask, do I have to sell my soul to get more hours in the day, or do you have a secret I don't know about when it comes to juggling all these things?
Yeah. When I think about like how much I'm juggling, then I look at Glenn, who is like the founder of Winterland, Glenn Van Dyke. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like she's a force and she's doing so much. all the time. And so I never like feel bad about myself because I just like look at Glenn and I'm like, okay, yeah, Word. I can handle this.
Well, shout outs to Glenn.
Yeah.
So what's the goal and vision of Winterland Records and the festival coming up?
Yeah, goal and vision. I mean, it was Glenn's vision to begin with. So I met Glenn, I don't know how many years ago. Now I had been back to Jacksonville maybe 1 or 2 years and I was playing in this garage rock project called the Mother Gooses, and she was still living in New York. And her band Boy Toy, I was a fan of her band, and they came through. They were on tour, and we got asked to like open a show for them, and we couldn't do it. But I stayed in touch with Glenn, and at some point after that, she was coming in town for a visit, and we connected, and we decided to meet up at a show that was happening at Mock Shop Music Exchange in Murray Hill. And she was saying, you know, I'm thinking about moving back to Jacksonville. I'm kind of like, you know, done with New York. Her band was like at a point where like they could go on tour. She could leave from wherever she wanted. She didn't need to like be living in New York. I think even that night she was like, I want to come back and I want to start a music festival here. And I was like, wow, that sounds ambitious. But and then she did. She moved back and we had like a couple meetings about it. I connected her with friends of mine who were running the now defunct Space Gallery downtown next to the Florida Theater. And so we did the first one there and it was like 20 something bands.
The Space Gallery?
Yeah. The very first one. Yeah. Yeah. So the first one was, I mean, as far as like a success story, Glenn bootstrapped the thing with like $5,000 and we made like $5,000, you know, over two nights. So like we broke even. And so she's like, let's do it bigger next year. The second year, it expanded into Five Points, and we had like 4 or 5, you know, some of them venues, like, you know, the back of Rain Dogs, and then like Root Down, where we had to like put a PA in there and a stage. And, you know, I think there was like 5 locations that year, and we had a couple dozen bands. Year 3 was like expanded to 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And that was February of 2020, and the world shut down like a month after that. But, just like the growth of that, I think, you know, again, it was like the bill, what we're in the hole for year 3 was significantly more than what we're in the hole for year 1.
We also at least breaking even.
We broke even again. Yeah. And
it was a good milestone.
And so, that's without any, I mean, besides like, you know, a couple local businesses giving us like $500, you know, for like a sponsorship logo on flyers or something. Like we had no like really support for it, you know? And so this is the first year, you know, we moved it downtown. We got the permit to do it on the lawn, on the river, which is like super exciting. And it's another thing where it's like Glenn just being like extremely ambitious and probably me being like, curb your enthusiasm. Like, I don't know. Should we just do in Five Points again? Yeah. Like seemed to work pretty well.
My backyard is pretty spacious.
Yeah. So, I mean, she got it done. We got like some sponsorship from Red Bull and New Belgium.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, just through, you know, her and then our other partner in it, who's I think more a foundational piece than myself, is Lena Simon too. She, between her and Glenn, like, you know, they've both been in like bands that have toured the world. They have all these like sort of connections, especially in like indie music scenes and stuff in LA and New York. And so they're able to like, I don't want to say like they're completely favors, but we're definitely getting like a discount on some of these headlining bands, you know, because of, you know, their connections. And every time we bring somebody to Jacksonville, it's like, they love it. They love it here. And they wouldn't have come through here otherwise. And so like, especially this year, cause we didn't do it last year, pandemic, we had, you know, all these bands who'd come, you know, from even different parts of the country, like reach out and they wanted to play again. And, you know,
people are ready.
I think there's good momentum behind it. I'm really excited. You know, we'll see how it goes. Hopefully the weather's nice. And
it's 2 days again this year?
2 days, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess 2 days.
Yeah. Saturday and Sunday. And it's free this year. I mean, we had to make it free to to put it
on the lawn. Yeah,
on the lawn. So,
but primo location, man. Primo location.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how it looks. I mean, we've gone and walked the site a couple times, and it's just like, what a great place for a festival.
For sure. Yeah. And for anyone curious, I mean, I'll have a link in the show notes, but some of the headliners that they've got posted on the site, we got La Luz, Caroline Rose, Reggie Watts, Slow Thrust, some tried and true Jax, native acts, LPT, Love Culture, Sailor Goon will be there. And really, the list continues on and on, man. Like, good work, dude. Seriously.
Thank you. Yeah, it's exciting.
Who are you most excited about?
I mean, Reggie Watts was like, you know, that was kind of a crazy thing to like get him to come here. We, my band, we had a Kairos Creature Club. We had a residency in LA in September. So we played like the same venue for a month, like every Monday for a month out in LA. And Reggie Watts came to one of the shows. Like, he was like side stage, like just like kept looking over, and it's like, oh, Reggie Watts is at like the side of the stage. And then, you know, he like bought a record, like, he hung out with us like all night and talked. And I think at a certain point, Glenn was like, hey, we do this festival. You want to come like perform? And he was like, absolutely. Sure. It was like as easy as that. But, the fact that he's coming, and I think, you know, people who hadn't heard about Winterland before that are like, just sort of like got turned on to it this year. That's like the thing that people bring up to me. Like, how'd you guys get Reggie Watts? How'd you guys get Reggie Watts? Cause you know,
you're like, because I'm fucking Matt Shum, that's why.
But it's just one of those things, you know, it's like all like, you know, happenstance. And, yeah, you know, it's a, kind of the fun thing about seeing these projects come together. It's just like, you don't realize until like it all happens, like how much you're pulling from, you know, all these different moments in your life and all these connections that you made. And we want more sort of emerging up and coming artists to come through Jacksonville and sort of like put it on their radar. So that like when they're routing a tour later on, you know, down the road, they make sure to come through Jacksonville. And then also that piece about like, you know, providing a platform for local artists to play like a big festival. And then get to like, you know, play essentially alongside these like big headliners who are touring. And it's that other piece of like getting to actually see yourself, you know, like doing something. And
this is a viable option for you, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like as a musician, exactly. You could be doing this.
Yeah. I want this city to be cool, and I want bands to want to come through here because I want to go to their shows, you know, and I want, you know, more opportunities for myself and my friends and, you know, all the creative people in Jacksonville to like, you know, be able to take advantage of. So
are there multiple stages this year?
There's two, yeah. There's two stages, but they're sort of like side by side, like facing away from each other, so that when we change over, there'll be like, you know, somebody setting up while another band's playing.
Okay.
So the crowd won't have to move far. They're just kind of like shift over. Yeah.
I guess after, you know, hearing how involved you've kind of been with the Jax music scene from your, you know, time at, you know, Folio Void and now WJCT and the Jax music experience, I'm curious, you know, what's been the most significant change or development to the music scene here in Jax that you've been able to experience or write about as a music journalist? Like, do you feel like you could maybe narrow it down to one moment?
I think that we're yet to kind of like reach that point. But I think part of that is because, you know, we just like went through, you know, 2 years of a pandemic and stuff.
Sure.
And I
like think that restart.
Yeah, it's a restart. So I'm excited. I'm really excited to see everything like coming back to life and all these artists who like made pandemic projects, you know, all this music that came out during the pandemic, and then to see these artists like actually get to perform. And hopefully some of them might get out of Jacksonville, go on tour and play other places and then come back and keep making music here. I mean, I think we have some really good bones now. I think there's like the venues that made it and like weathered the storm. There's lots of places. There's really every size room that you need for like a major music market. So we've got like the infrastructure, I think, for that. We have a lot of artists like making really good music, and I think it remains to be seen, but I think we're going to hit some kind of like inflection point where maybe in a couple of years now we're like, okay, that's the point that Jacksonville arrived or something, you know? Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that I think is interesting about Winterland, and not to like toot our horns or anything, but like, this is locally founded, like, you know, bootstrapped here, with no, you know, really civic support up to this point. And, you know, we're assuming all the risk of it, you know? And so that's why I think it's like really important that, that if you are interested in this kind of stuff, like, you know, maybe it's not Winterland, maybe it's like, I don't know, maybe you've found your scene at Underbelly or at Archetype or whatever. But that you like, you know, make a point of supporting those things and going to them as much as you can. So it becomes like a viable, viable way to, for people to make a living, and it can stay open and whatever. But yeah, I think, I don't know what the solution is to that. I think like, if we can continue doing Winterland and maybe people see like what we do with Winterland and they do their own like kind of festival, and they find their own, you know, sort of, resources to make it bigger or better or whatever. And somebody pays attention to it, and then you finally get that like kind of critical mass or something. But,
and do y'all pick the artists that are on the, so let's say like the local artists, do y'all actually pick them, or mm-hmm. can people, let's say for next year's Winterland, like, can people actually submit their work?
Yeah.
Or to be featured?
We should. Yeah. I think that's something that we should, and we've talked about it before, but having like a submission platform or something for the festival in general,
even if it's voted on, the public decide like who they want to see for, you know, as the viewer's choice band or whoever musician that goes up. I think there's like interesting ways of, obviously y'all know how to do this. I'm not telling y'all what to do, but
I know. And there's like, we definitely don't know every, it's a city of a million people and a lot of creatives. So we definitely don't know all the musicians and stuff, but we've tried to every year, like not, you know, unless we had like a, this artist blew up and we, you know, we got to put them on again. You know, we've tried to like, okay, if you played last year, like you can play like the year after, you know, and just sort of like keeping it rotating. So everybody gets an opportunity, and we have less bands this year, less days. We have less places to put them, you know? So, I think like the last time we did it, there was like 48 bands total or something. That was like 36 locals and 12 out of town headliners.
Damn.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, I love the idea of having a submission platform for that. Yeah.
Look at you, Tony. It's People's Choice Award, Tony.
I know. Come on. Join the team.
Oh, the last thing I want to know is, who is the new artist in the city that people may not know? You can't mention anyone we mentioned already.
Yeah.
So no Sailor Moons. Come on.
This was not on your list of questions.
Technically, I did have a question. It wasn't on the list, but it was. I had something similar to Tony. I was going to ask about, I was going to ask for three acts that you'd recommend listeners check out right now to get a good representation of like the Jax music experience. But I like Tony.
I like yours better.
All right, we'll take mine.
We'll take one you want.
And I'm going to dodge it in a certain way too, because, so we just did our first, we launched this JME showcase series, through WJCT, that we're doing three different shows at three venues, all local acts on those. And so the last one that we did, this is going to be my list of people to check out, is like, who's playing these. And there's, again, you know, I'm trying to be, try not to hurt anybody's feelings or anything like that. But, you know, cause there's definitely more artists than this. But so we had at, Blue Jay last weekend, we had, a band called Souvenir. We had Animal Clinic, who's like a synth heavy kind of, singer songwriter artist. We had Sailor Goon play. And then we had Ebony Payne English, who's just, you know, a force. Like, when Ebony was performing, I was like, the fact that like I could book Ebony Payne English at a place and like, she, you know, she's playing in a room in front of 70 people. I was just like, this is like, I don't know. She's so incredible. And I felt like there has to be like a much bigger audience for the work that Ebony's doing. Cause it was like, there was people in the front row crying like while she was performing.
Oh, no, I've definitely cried to Ebony's performances in the past.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so Ebony's another one. The next show we're doing is at the WJCT Soundstage. And this local three-piece garage rock band called Pool Boy is opening that show. And then Focus People, it's like Americana singer-songwriter Stacey Bennett's project.
Shout out to Robbie Knopf. He's a member of that band. He's the host of the Straight Chillin' podcast. So shout out to Robbie.
I gotta check that out. Yeah. I haven't heard that. And then we have a special guest headliner, so keep your ears and eyes peeled for that. I'm pretty excited
Matt
about
Shaw
it.
Is the headliner.
And then we're doing Underbelly in April. And we have a kind of country singer-songwriter, more like folk, this guy who goes by Howdy, opening that show. We have Bad Madonna, who's a young singer-songwriter from Jacksonville, playing that show. Who else do we have? Juan is H-U-A-N. He's like indie pop, like kind of blowing up on Spotify playlists right now. He's super sick. And then Love Culture is playing that show as well. Oh, and this indie rock band called Seagate, who's, have you heard them?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, they sound like the Smiths or something. And they're like young kids from the beach. And they're like, they're super cool.
Seagate,
yeah.
Are you writing this down, Botter?
No, I'm actually pulling up the song by Juan that I added to my list last year. It was called Days. It was a single.
Oh, yeah.
Super tight, yeah. Warren is type. Yeah. Damn. Well, good stuff, man. Matt, there's definitely one thing I don't think you have to worry about, and that's anyone feeling like you are gatekeeping. I feel like you are giving everyone a fair shot and, you know, amplifying the voices and the talent that we have here in Jax, man. So kudos to everything you got going on.
Thanks so much. Yeah.
The Jax Music Experience, like I said, is a fantastic platform, and I recommend anyone that's not familiar with it to check it out. I'll have a link to that.
Can I talk about the last records that I bought?
Oh, hell.
Because I brought them.
Yeah, you know what? Hell yeah, you can. Tell us about some of these recent records.
Yeah, so there's a caveat to this because like we're, our house is under construction right now. So like we're moved out of our house and I had to box up all my records and put them away.
Which is when you realized, why I have a lot of fucking records and these are heavy.
Record boxes are so heavy, right?
Yeah, they are.
I haven't been buying as much vinyl as I usually do, but like one of the cool things about like when you go on tour with your band and you have like, you know, some downtime is like, you know, especially the people in my band, we always like to look for like a vintage clothing store, a bookstore and like a record shop. And so we were down in Miami and downtown Miami, went to Sweat Records, which is a high recommend from me. And so I got, this is sort of like an insight into my like listening taste, but also like, I guess the purchasing that I do when I buy vinyl. I'm always like, you know, because I have a three-year-old at home and my partner, Samantha, her musical tastes are probably not as like where I will lean more towards like dissonant or something that like, I don't know, it's just like abrasive, you know, like a Butthole Surfers record or like, you know, if we're talking about jazz, I'd be like Anthony Braxton and then, you know.
Something to get the blood going.
Yeah. And so I will buy, what I do now is I usually will buy two records. And so I'll buy something that is like, for me, that I'll probably listen to on my own. And then I have to buy something that's like palatable for the house.
There you go. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
And so actually it didn't really work out this time because I think, my family liked both of these. But I like to look for like reggae from like the late 60s and early 70s. Like,
hold that one up for the camera.
So this is, I've never heard of this band. They're called the Twinkle Brothers. And the record's called Rasta Pon Top. And it was, the reason I pulled this one was, it was recorded at Channel One Recording Studio, which is a famous, recording studio in Kingston. So I was like pretty sure that I was going to score with this. So, and I haven't even listened to it yet, but the guys look, I mean, we were talking about press photos. Look how freaking cool that is. Like, these guys just look awesome. So I got that. And then I've been really digging this guy, Curtis Harding. I'm sure you guys, maybe know him. He's like kind of a neo soul R&B.
Yeah.
Dude.
Good stuff there.
Yeah. So I got this Curtis Harding record because I've been listening to him on Spotify with the family, and everybody digs Curtis Harding.
Yeah, it's a safe bet. Yeah, yeah. Good safe stuff. Bet. I like it, man. No, thank you. That was good. But yeah, Matt, great work, man. And it was an honor to meet you and get to talk about everything you've contributed to the scene. Spinheads, if you are local to Jax, definitely check out the Winterland Festival. Like I said, I'll have a link to that in the show notes. Surprise, it's free, considering the epic lineup that they've got. And much to Matt's point, something that you said earlier that I'll sum up in my favorite phrase, which is, you know, support with your dollars. You know, you got great stuff like this going on. In this case, it's free. So go out there and support so we can continue getting really dope stuff like this happening in the city. Tony, you got any parting words before I pass it to Matt for his shameless plugs?
Pass it to Matt.
Damn, you don't want to be like, yo, new artist, look, I've got a deal going on, holla at me for pictures.
No, please.
I did it for you. It's all good. All good. Matt, I'll turn it to you for any parting words or shameless plugs that you want to share with us in the next Spin Crew.
Support public media. You know, it's listener and reader supported. You know, we don't we're not a big for-profit corporation or anything. It's non-profit media. So the way to support that is like with your eyeballs and ears. So jaxmusic.org is a high recommend, obviously. But, you know, you can learn something about the music that's being made in your backyard if you're from Jacksonville, but also about, you know, we write about a lot of like national, international music on there too. So that to me, it like provides context for like what you're hearing locally too. So, there's playlists and all sorts of stuff. We update it several times a day too, so you can always find something new. So if you're sitting around scrolling Instagram and you're bored going through your feed or TikTok or whatever, like just go to jaxmusic.org and read something and learn something.
There you go. Get your learn on. All right. Thank you so much, Matt. With that being said, there you have it, Spinheads. We just shared with you an excellent conversation with Matthew Shaw. I have links in the show notes if you want to check out any of the stuff that we talked about. Hopefully it's safe to say you enjoy this conversation, and it's probably even more safer to say that you probably surround yourself with people with good music taste, and chances are they might enjoy hearing what we shared today as well. So do us a small favor and share this episode with your favorite music obsessed friend or family member. We all got that family member that likes music a little too much, and that's exactly who we want listening to the show. Tell them to subscribe to the Next Spin podcast and help us grow the show, right? We'd appreciate it a lot. I want to thank my co-host Tony for hopping on here and co-piloting this. He's not going to say anything, so that's everything you heard from Tony at to this point. But also I want to thank Tony for making the introduction and holding down the fort today. You'll hear from the rest of the crew in a couple of weeks, just in time for our next vinyl meetup. I believe the theme is going to be what? Is it soul music from
different decades?
Across the decades. Never mind, you just heard from Tony. All right, I lied. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app or follow us on Instagram and Twitter so you don't miss out. That's it for our show today, Spinheads. Take care of yourselves and don't forget to play your records. See you in a few weeks for the next spin. Peace.